listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
This is your brand new European Football Roundup podcast. I'm Rob Daly. In this show, we're across the fixtures in Germany, France, Spain, Italy and more. My co-host today is Chris Parrott.
Yep, a big blow for Barca, Rob, as Lionel Messi picks up an injury. Fiorentina are the new Serie A leaders and Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain pull clear in Germany and France respectively.
Spanish football journalist Dermot Corrigan joins us. Very excited about that. Plus, we'll tell you about every single team that'll face a Premier League side in Europe this week.
This is Football in Europe.
Chris, I'm back from Germany.
Yeah, how was it?
Yeah, it was very, very good. On a Friday night, I went to Cologne. I went to see Cologne play against Ingolstadt, which was a wonderful atmosphere. That a couple of days after the Lewandowski game. And I went to Dortmund on Sunday. So we'll get onto that a little bit later in the programme. But just great European experiences and any, you know, football fans, English football fans in particular, it's cheap to get across to the continent. You know, I strongly recommend heading to sort of the northwest of Germany, because you can go and see sort of four or five teams in the space of a week if you plan the trip properly. Chris, you've had a big week as well, because as we mentioned at the end of the last show, you were off to interview one of the most successful managers of the past, two decades, Jose Mourinho. Yeah. Give me the gossip. Give me the gossip, mate.
Fascinating. To be honest, it was 27 minutes with Jose Mourinho, and it went by in a flash, talking about his Champions League journey. Basically, goes back to Porto with Chelsea this week, and most of it was about that 2004 success. That he spoke with incredible passion about winning it with a Portuguese side, of course, and just generally almost a tinge of regret's the wrong word, but he spoke about how much he, for me, there was two really interesting points that he made. And one was that how much he might have won with that Porto side if he'd stayed, if he'd been able to stay and he'd been able to keep the players. Of course, a lot of them followed him to Chelsea in that first spell. And also about that famous touchline jaunt at Old Trafford when he first really came into the English football fan's psyche, I guess. And he talked about how it's a famous story, but Sir Alex Ferguson and Gary Neville actually knocked on the dressing room afterwards and congratulated him and his team, and he said that's something he's never forgotten. You could listen to him talk for hours, and it was a real privilege to be in the same room as him, to be honest. Yeah, it's going to be on this week. You'll be able to catch it on BT Sport, I think, and also on UEFA.com as well.
Okay, we'll be speaking to Dermot Corrigan on all matters Barca, Messi, Real Madrid and Atletico shortly. But Chris, two huge games in Italy this weekend, so let's start there.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
Inter and Fiorentina were the top two teams in Italy going into the weekend, and they met on Sunday night. Roberto Mancini's side had won all five league games, but at San Siro, they were beaten 4-1. Delight for Fiorentina head coach Juan Paolo Sosa. Chris, a first-half collapse really responsible for the Nerazzurri losing, you know, this huge, huge game.
Yeah, it was. Fiorentina top for the first time since February 1999, a whole generation ago. They were 3-0 up inside 30 minutes, Rob, in the game of the weekend, let's be honest, across Europe. Amazing from Paolo Sosa. Took over in the summer. What an impact he's had. Early penalty got them going from Ilicic, and then a hat-trick from a former Blackburn Rovers man, Nikola Kalinic. Didn't quite work in England, but it's been a really good signing for Paolo Sosa's side since joining from Dnipro. They fully deserved the win. There was some average defending from Inter, who, you know, we talked about in that midweek podcast, had won games by one goal, and it was whether that was a good thing and they were really tight, or whether they were maybe grinding out performances. Well, on this evidence, Fiorentina were far better. They're top now, and all of a sudden people talking about Paolo Sosa's side mounting a title challenge instead of Mancini's.
Yeah, and I'm not entirely convinced by Inter myself, having seen them a couple of times this season. I do have reservations. I know there was a lot of excitement, but their lack of goal scoring prowess, despite that defensive solidity you mentioned, I just wonder if they are going to lack goals this season. Stefan Jovetic has done well, but they do have the forwards. That'd be the main area of concern for me. I mean, maybe a freak result to concede four, but, you know, scoring goals might be a concern there.
Yeah, I think so. In fairness to Mancini, he's played down talk of the Scudetto, hasn't he? Said after the match, doesn't change anything for him. I still think for both those sides, if you offered them a top three finish at the start of the season and a place in the Champions League, they would have would have bitten your hand off, and they both look well set for that. That would be a very successful season, I think, for either Inter or Fiorentina. I think it's the fact that Inter have started so well and that Juventus and Roma have started so poorly, really, which is the reason why everyone was talking about that title. But certainly a shot in the arm for Inter. It'll be really good to see how they react to that defeat, I think.
There was another huge game in Italy this weekend, Chris, and bizarrely it was a meeting of two teams who I think actually started the day in the bottom half of the league table. Napoli 2, Juventus 1, a third defeat of the campaign for Juve now. And I saw that Gigi Buffon, Chris, is talking about shelving any talk about defending their title for a few months because they're well off the pace.
10 points behind Inter and Fiorentina now. Another defeat. Gonzalo Higuain was the star for Napoli again. We've talked about it. Andy Brassels, we've had him on talking about if he was to sign a striker, it would be Higuain. And he scored a good goal. He set up another one. Good win for Napoli. But, I mean, Juve was shorn of so many players. Lichtsteiner, Marchisio, Mandzukic, Khedira, Morata and Cuadrado didn't start the game, I don't think. So it was it's such a different side to last season. And I think Buffon is absolutely right in that assessment. At the moment, they look nowhere near challenging for the title, let's be honest. And maybe it's going to be about getting through their group in the Champions League. They beat City. They host Sevilla this week. But it's been a very, very bad start domestically for Juventus, let's be honest. I think they're slightly fortunate, actually, that nobody has won all their games. Otherwise, they'd be even further behind and off the pace.
I mean, you can't really write off a team after this many games, but you would be tempted to. I mean, what are they on? They're on 5 points, so 10 points behind the two teams at the top. Because no other team has outright convinced me. I don't know if Fiorentina have the longevity and concerns about Inter, that Juve might still be in this title race.
But they have to improve, and they have to improve quick. And because they've won it so many times in a row and by such margins, I think Gigi Buffon is... that's more out of hope than expectation that people won't talk about their title challenge every week because that's the standards they've set. But they're not out of it yet, but they do need to improve ASAP. Otherwise, if they go any further behind, I think it's very, very difficult to see them winning it again.
Juve's City rivals Torino beat Palermo to move up to third, although the hosts finished with 9 men after 2 red cards. You have to see the goal from Marco Benassi for Torino, reminiscent of another Marco, Van Basten, from the Euro 88 final. Absolutely outstanding volley. Lazio beat LS Verona by 2-1. Chris, a big win for Roma, 5-1 against newly promoted Carpi. Perhaps not too many surprises there. And Mo Salah scoring again. He's such a good player. But let's talk about injuries, because injuries for Roma.
Yeah, it actually came at a cost, didn't it? Dzeko out for possibly for a month with a knee injury. Shame, because he started well for Roma. And Totti and Keita are going to miss their Champions League match with Bartier Borisov this week as well. So you'd expect them to beat Carpi, who... at that tiny club, remember, who were in their first season in the top flight. They were almost amateurs just a few years ago, and they beat them 5-1. Carpi looked like a season of struggle for them, but from Roma's point of view, it came out at a big cost, particularly with Dzeko and Totti and Keita, as I mentioned. And they'll be disappointed with that, because they got that brilliant point, didn't they, against that goal from Florenzi, which is... I've watched that again this morning, that halfway line against Barca. They got a point, which puts them in a really good position in the group, but they're going to be without some key players for a while, sadly.
But the other notable game, I suppose, Mario Balotelli starting for AC Milan again, away at Genoa this time, but they lost 1-0 Milan and finished with 10 men.
Well, Mihailovic wasn't happy afterwards. He says, "It can't keep gifting teams a whole half," which sums it up. I mean, normally a coach will say we can't keep gifting them chances, but a whole half, I mean, it's 45 minutes. Yeah, they've lost 3 of their six games right now. And he's never want to mince his words, Mihailovic, wasn't happy. By the way, you'll probably find it on YouTube, but Balotelli did a mad Rabona pass, by the way, in that game.
I've not seen that.
Teed up Luis Adriano, who didn't score. It was a decent save, actually. But the pass was incredible from Balotelli. But, yeah, another defeat for them. And as we said earlier, I guess, although Inter lost against Fiorentina, the start they've made under Mancini this season, having spent money, just means that everything Milan don't do, having also spent cash under Mihailovic, I think, puts the pressure more on the Rossonieri, who are desperate to get back into that top three, but a bad loss for them at Genoa.
You just feel there's an opportunity for someone to grab this title race by the horns, and I just wonder if that will be Fiorentina. So the league table looks like this. Fiorentina are top, level on points with Inter. Torino, Sassuolo, Lazio, Roma, Chievo and Sampdoria aren't far behind.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Okay, let's go to Madrid and bring in Spanish football journalist Dermot Corrigan for his first appearance on Football in Europe. Dermot, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Rob. Nice to talk to you.
We'll talk about Villarreal Atletico in a moment, but I want to talk to you about Barcelona. They did beat Las Palmas by 2-1, Luis Suarez with both goals. But the major story was Lionel Messi picking up the injury. I suppose the silver lining is at least he can't take penalties now. But what's the latest on Messi's injury, and how do you think that's going to affect Barcelona?
Yeah, it was really strange on Saturday, because people even around the camp now, or people who I know, seem to be more worried about how Messi was getting on than whether Barca were going to win the game or not. The game suddenly became an afterthought on the afternoon to see how Messi's injury was. And 7 to 8 weeks is what Barcelona are saying, which is a pretty sizable amount of time. They don't have huge games within that. You know, they've the Champions League games are at home to Bayer Leverkusen and against Bade Borisov. They have a trip to Sevilla next weekend, but they should do okay in the games. But it's just that Messi's such a huge figure around the club. He dominates everything. And when Messi's not there, or even if he's watching in the stand or whatever, that becomes the story, rather than even when you have people like Neymar or Suarez who should in theory be able to step up and beat Getafe. Messi not being there just adds that little bit of extra uncertainty to what's going to happen.
Did they make a mistake in the summer in letting too many personnel leave? And I'm even talking about pretty peripheral people who they did let go, because do you think they've got the squad depth, especially now considering this Messi injury, to stay in the title race until Christmas, until January, when Arda Turan and Alex Fidel can start playing?
Yeah, it was very strange to see what they did, even to let Xavi go to Qatar and then Pedro to go as well.
Yeah,
they weren't guys who were going to play, but even to say, will you hang on another 6 months until January would have made sense.
Exactly.
And especially the way things have worked out now, like Rafinha's gone, Messi's going to be out for a while. You're looking at the team going, you know, Sergio Roberto suddenly becomes a really important player. They need him in two positions, whereas before he was the kind of guy who they thought, you know, may or may not make it. So yeah, it shows how badly they screwed up by getting that FIFA ban and you know, go back over it. But the board really dropped the ball on that one, because they refused to really get involved with FIFA and let it drag on and on until the ban came in. Now they're kind of saying, oh, it's not fair, we have to be allowed to register Arda or register Alex Vidal. But yeah, I'd agree with you completely that the squad depth is a real issue now. Even to try and rotate players, people like Iniesta are going to have to play a lot of games through the autumn time, when you'd want them maybe to be coming in and out so that they'd be in peak condition in May. So it's a big problem.
Let's talk. Were you at the Bernabeu at the weekend for the Malaga
game?
Okay, so 0-0 at the Bernabeu. I mean, that doesn't happen often. What happened, Dermot?
Yeah, 56 games going back 2 years before, since Madrid hadn't scored in a game, and that was at home to Atletico, you know, which is a tough game. They just battered down Malaga, but Malaga were really well organised and defended well and didn't give up. You know, there was 31 shots, but a lot of them weren't like bad misses from open goals or really amazing saves from Carlos Kameni, the Malaga keeper. It was just that Madrid were getting frustrated and having goals from everywhere, and it was flying well wide, especially Ronaldo. Malaga are a very organised team. You know, they've done well against Barca at the Camp Nou before. But also the feeling with Benitez as Madrid is that, even, you know, going back to his career at Liverpool and Chelsea and other clubs, that he's a very good guy to set you up to go and win a difficult away game, like at Athletic Bilbao midweek when they won 2-1. You know, Rafa afterwards talked about how great the team had been. They'd switched systems 4 times during the game. They were always on top tactically. That's less important against Malaga. That's when you, at home, is when you want the team to just go for it and break them open and batter them down. And it didn't happen. He was kind of laying the blame a little bit onto his forwards, which, you know, always means Cristiano. When if you say we made a lot of chances and they weren't taken, he doesn't have to mention the word Cristiano for it to feel that that's what he's saying, even if that's not what he meant. Which, you know, there's been a little touch of Rafa not playing the PR game and just talking all the time about how great Ronaldo is and just making sure he prefaces everything with best player in the world. So again, it's something to just Rafa's his own man. He's very likable as well. I think as a guy, he talks to the media, he's very open and honest with his answers. But whether he's playing the game at Madrid that you need to play and whether he's the right man for the job, we still have to see.
Yeah, an exciting season on, I think, in Spain. And most notably, perhaps, I mean, everyone's talking about Celta Vigo. We'll talk about them in a moment. But Villarreal, I think they're top of the table now, Dermot, after beating Atletico 1-0. And what a story, in particular, because of the goal scorer in that game.
Yeah, Leo Baptistão, who has been at Atletico for a couple of years, but Simeone just doesn't really seem to rate him. I don't think he's not a Simeone-type player who runs around and gets stuck in and physical and that. He's a very good player, Leo, but he's a kind of technical, kind of strolling type of a guy. Took the goal really, really well. And Villarreal are flying, yeah, like 5 wins in a row. They drew the first game, then they won their next 5. Not a totally new team, but 11 new players during the summer who have come in. They've had some injuries as well. But they just have such a great structure there. The new guys who come in, they come into a team which knows exactly what it's doing. The club are really well run. There's no problems. You know, the training ground, everything is really well set up for the team. They all pull together at the club. There's never any news of, like, rows or whatever. And Marcelino's a really good coach. He's really good at getting a team organised. They know what they want to do in a game. They went 1-0 up, and Atletico didn't really have many chances to come back into it. You know, I was at the Bernabeu, so I just saw the second half of the game, but you didn't get a feeling that Atletico are about to score, that in any way the Villarreal look pretty comfortable and deserve to be top. They've been the best team so far in La Liga.
Given the iffy starts from Sevilla, who did beat Rayo Vallecano at the weekend, and Valencia, do you think Villarreal's realistic objective and maximum goal would be a Champions League spot, that they think maybe we can get back into the competition and sneak fourth?
Yeah, I think that does look realistic at the moment. They also they're in the Europa League as well, which is going to be a drain on them. And last year, they were doing really well up until February or so. They got some key injuries and they fell away because they had so many games in the two cup competitions as well. But I think so. They have a good lead on Sevilla now. I think they have 11 points on Sevilla and they would have 7 points on Valencia maybe. So, you know, they have a bit of a lead, a cushion there. In the Europa League game, they didn't seem to be prioritising it during the week. They changed the team completely the last Europa League game and got beaten in Austria. So they have a big squad. You know, the first team is a lot better maybe than the guys who come in. But when players come in, they know their roles, they know their jobs that they have to do. So they're definitely up there. Celta as well, who you mentioned, you know, they're not in Europe at all. And maybe they might be able to put a push on. But I think we're definitely going to see a case where there is maybe 4 or 5 teams battling for that fourth spot, with Atletico and Barca Madrid finishing in the top 3 as usual.
Yeah, you mentioned Celta there. I've really just enjoyed watching the way they play. And they got that 1-1 draw against Eibar at the weekend with Aspas scoring again. How big was the win for Valencia? You know, I think they beat Granada 1-0 on Friday. Given the pressure that was on Nuno and the booing at the Mestalla, I mean, how big a win is that?
It was a huge win. It was a nervy win. You know, Mustafi got the goal, the header. He's been their best player this year, the German centre half. He's kind of stepped up because Otamendi's not there. But there's a lot of players in the team who are a little bit iffy. The transfer window has not gone well for them. And I think people are starting to realise, you know, fans who thought, oh, great, Peter Lim is going to come in. He's a billionaire. He knows Jorge Mendes. He's going to get us a load of great players. We're going to have a top team at the top of the Champions League. They're looking at the team now and they're seeing guys who've come in for a lot of money who are not really top players. You know, maybe they're young guys from Portugal or whoever who seem to have a lot of potential, but you wonder if they're just not really what the Valencia fans were expecting.
And speaking of disgruntlement, because I think there has been, from what I've heard, a little bit at Sociedad this season after a disappointing start and not looking like they were going to score many goals. The Basque derby this weekend with Athletic Bilbao, 0-0. I mean, I wasn't particularly surprised by the scoreline, in truth. But, you know, what did you make of that game?
Yeah, it wasn't the most fun game to watch at all. Like, the Basque derbies, they tend to be, you know, competitive, physical, athletic type of, or excuse me, it is athletic, but, you know, tough games that you have to kind of grind down the opponent in. It all wasn't a big result. The thing about it is that Real Sociedad, if you look at their squad, they have a lot of good ball players. They're not a team their squad is not really made for playing that type of a game. You know, the guys like Canales and Granero and Ruben Pardo in midfield are really good ball players. Then you've got Vela up front. You know, he's not a guy who you want to be launching the ball long to. But Moyes, you know, he has them playing that tight game, playing the percentages, which, you know, worked well for him at Everton. But he has a different type of a squad. You know, he doesn't have those type of Tim Cahill type players who are in there who were suited to that. So I don't know. There does seem to be a kind of feeling of drift between Moyes on one side and the club and the fans on the other side. I don't think there's going to be any major drama, or I can't see him being sacked in the next couple of weeks, even if results don't go great. But there's a feeling that the excitement that was around, you know, getting a former Manchester United manager, a big name from the Premier League, to come into Real Sociedad, that excitement is pretty much gone at this stage, and fans are just kind of not enjoying the football and not really optimistic about the rest of the season.
So Villarreal at top after six games, still unbeaten, 1 point above Barca, then it's Real Madrid, Celta Vigo, and then Atletico in fifth. Dermot, I just wanted to ask you, so how long have you been in Madrid now?
I've been in Madrid coming up to 5 years.
Okay, right. So, you know, we like to talk about match day experience on the show and the best places to go. Obviously, everyone wants to go to the Camp Nou, and everyone wants to go to the Bernabeu. They're musts. But what would you recommend as well on a weekend away, your sort of favourite type of match day?
I'd say if people get a chance to go to Rayo Vallecano, to the Estadio Vallecas, it's really worthwhile going. Because I do know a lot of people ask me, you know, friends or people who get in touch with Twitter, and they go, I need to get tickets for the Bernabeu. And it might be a game, you know, against Granada at home or against Betis at home or something. And the chances are Madrid are going to win it pretty easily. You know, there's not a great atmosphere at it. It's not a real feeling of a big game. Whereas if you go to Rayo, no matter who's playing, there's always a really good atmosphere at the stadium. Fans make a lot of noise. You can sit in right amongst the kind of real authentic, and it sounds a bit kind of cliche, but authentic type of football fans. There's a lot of families go, a lot of people bring their sandwiches and unwrap them at halftime and have them. Whereas if you go to the Bernabeu, people are more likely to head off for a bad burger or catering or whatever. So feeling of a club. And they play some really good football as well. You know, you tend to get dramatic games at Vallecas. They don't always win, but they can make some mistakes at the back, or when they're going well, they can score a lot of goals. So Paco Gemes' team are definitely a good team to watch. So if people get a chance, I'd recommend they head along and see one of their games.
And not only that, Dermot, but you get to see former Manchester United striker Bebe in the flesh.
Was an amazing goal he scored at the weekend. Bebe, you know, he is a kind of figure of fun, I guess, that there was the whole controversy about his transfer back in the day from Portugal over to United. He did okay at Cordoba last year on loan. He played really well against Madrid in that game, but Cordoba was a bit of a disaster the way things were set up there, and they went down pretty easily. But yeah, one of the goals of the season so far, a free kick from miles out the pitch. And he's an exciting player to watch. You know, he's fast, he's strong, he's quick. He tries to do things. It doesn't always come off for him. But yeah, he's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Dermot, thanks you very much for coming on the show.
Cheers, Rob. Really enjoyed it.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
So big thanks to Dermot for coming on the programme. Chris, I came back from Germany this morning. I went to the Dortmund game, as I mentioned, on Sunday. But let's start with how Bayern got on, because obviously it was following on from Lewandowski's 5-goal showing.
Yeah, well, he scored again. Just the two, Rob. 100 Bundesliga goals now. Fastest ever foreign player to reach that tally. And I think actually more ominously than that, because we'll get on to Dortmund, they didn't manage to win. Bayern, 7 wins out of 7, 4 points clear. Ominous is the word, given how little of a title race there's been in past seasons. It was a comfortable win away at Mainz, a good win. And yeah, that man Lewandowski, he can't stop scoring, can he? He's got a record at the moment which is Ronaldo and Messi-esque this season.
Proper number nine. And James Horncastle, I saw on BT, was, you know, saying he's the closest thing we've had to Marco van Basten, which I think is quite a nice technical comparison in the way that he plays. So a 4-point lead at the top of the table opens up ahead of Die Klassiker next weekend as Bayern take on Borussia Dortmund. Sunday, I was at Dortmund against Darmstadt, newly promoted team. 28,000 people pack into a stand behind one of the goals. But the home fans didn't leave happy because they were held to a 2-2 draw. They fell behind when Marcel Heller scored a stunning volley. Aubameyang got a couple in the second half, and it looked like they'd won it, with Adnan Januzaj coming on for Marco Reus and setting up that goal. But the 8,000 Darmstadt fans went absolutely mad when Aytan Şulu scored in the 90th minute. Dortmund failed to clear from a set piece, and Şulu, the centre-back, smashed it in. A great result. A quick one on Darmstadt. They're so effective on the road. There were no home wins in the Bundesliga this weekend. And Darmstadt are very effective on the road. They've already taken points off Schalke, Leverkusen, now Dortmund, away from home all those games. and because they're so solid defensively and they can play two forms of attacking play. They have the counter-attack because Marcel Heller, you know, he's incredibly fast and he got his goal on a quick break. And they can play long ball direct up to a big target man like Stroengel. But Chris, that the experience at Dortmund is intoxicating.
I spent £20 and went to Reading, and I can tell you the atmosphere at the Medeski on a Friday night blows you away.
I'm sure it's exactly the same.
Can I ask you, Dortmund have lost a lot of players. Lewandowski's one of them, of course. Aubameyang, if he carries on scoring, do you think he's another that might be looked at by, you know, the real big boys, Bayern, Real Madrid, Barcelona types, or teams in England?
It was something that did actually cross my mind when he scored his first goal. And he'd actually borderline missed an open goal in the first half. And I was looking at his movement and how quick he is and how much the centre-backs hate playing against him. I mean, his movement really is great. And, you know, he looks very confident in front of goal at the moment. I think some clubs will still be waiting to see if he drops off at some point. But if he goes through a season and bangs in, what, I don't know, 25, 30... You know, Dortmund are going to be in one of these situations again. He seems very at home there. He's best mates with Marco Reus. You should see them celebrate together. But that's a good point. I wonder if he continues in this form, whether he'll attract some big, big interest. Chris, let's talk about... before I talk about the Köln game on Friday night, you're off to Manchester United against Wolfsburg this week. So how did Wolfsburg get on?
Not very well. Held by Hannover. Just a second point for Hannover. They're bottom of the table. Bas Dost is still scoring goals, but disappointing that from Wolfsburg's point of view. And 9 points behind Bayern now. It's been that difficult week due to the crisis at Volkswagen, which is the main employer in the city of Wolfsburg and the main sponsor behind the football club as well. Klaus Allofs, the director, has said it won't affect the club at all. I think it's going to have to be wait and see on that. It's certainly a fascinating, you know, not just football but business, how it goes and how it turns out. But on the pitch, not the best result. I was fortunate enough to be at United on Saturday as well against Sunderland, and I do think there's real signs that front four of Memphis, Mata, Rooney and Martial really beginning to click. I can't wait to see them on a European night, and if I was Wolfsburg and I watched that game, it's going to be really interesting to see if they can stop them, because when they click, and if they do click this season, that front four for United, never mind BBC and MSN in the last couple of years for Real and Barca, we might have to think of some sort of clever acronym for those four United players.
I just started doing it in my head, but I've just got Emdemar.
It's hard.
Which is not right. We'll do something with the first names, probably. I think we'll have to do it from that. I'll just tell you quickly about a team also from the Bundesliga playing a Manchester club, because City come up against a Gladbach side who, since Lucien Favre left, after losing their opening five games, they've won two in a row. And I did commentate on their win at Stuttgart to the weekend. They've got their confidence back. I mean, they finished third last season. It was a disastrous start to the campaign, but under Andre Schubert, the under 23 coach who's taken charge of the senior team, you know, they've just got that threat again. And Raphael, who was very poor at the start of the season, scored his first goal of the campaign. He was so impressive. And Granit Xhaka's wearing the armband at the moment, really impressing with Martin Stransel, the normal captain, out at the moment. So Xhaka really stepping up with two goals in two games. Chris, can I bore you one more time about another game I went to in Germany?
Yes, go on, yeah. It's the Bundesliga. You won't be back there for a while, so fill your boots.
Exactly, yeah. So, on the podcast, I think we want to give people a bit of an idea of what atmospheres are like.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to try and do this over the season, aren't we? You know, tell people what it's like to go to these different grounds and different atmospheres. So on Friday night, I went to Cologne against Ingolstadt, another newly promoted side. It was a Friday night game. I was told the atmosphere is brilliant at the Rhein Energy Stadion. The game finished 1-1 and the fans were amazing as expected. And I met two supporters beforehand, Max and Alex. I asked them how the Köln team is looking this season.
Much better than the years before.
Right.
But, it's like up and down. We don't know where it goes.
Yeah, because what was it? You lost to Hertha in the week.
Every time you think it's good now and the team will be playing better than next few games, they are losing again.
And do you love Lukas Podolski?
Of course.
Everybody does here, right?
Let's pray for unsere Hymne.
And why is this club special?
Yeah, just go in, enjoy the game, then you will know about the club. It's just an awesome feeling to be in the stadium. Loud and I think a little crazy, you know, Carnival. It's like Carnival every day if the FC is playing.
Just waiting for the teams to come out now, and you can hear the Korn fans in a full voice. The whole stadium, everyone's got their red and white scarves above their heads. There's flags down the standing end of the ground, and it is quite a sight here at the moment ahead of kickoff against Ingolstadt.
Big thanks to Max and Alex for speaking to me. We've already heard about one former Blackburn striker, Chris. Another one, Anthony Modeste, actually scored in that game. But Ingolstadt unbeaten on the road since promotion. You know, they're a very effective team, much like Darmstadt. But that's a great away day, by the way. If you're looking for any European away days, a flight to Cologne's just over an hour.
Can I talk to you about my experience of football in Cologne?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I didn't know there was one.
Yeah, well, I went a couple of seasons ago, and for reasons best known to the man who organised it. It was a really good trip. We went to see Leuven in Belgium afterwards, but we tried to go and see a third tier team in Cologne.
Oh God!
And got a taxi out essentially into the middle of the countryside, and the game was just cancelled. We did the only thing you can do and went to a beer hall in Cologne for the rest of the afternoon.
Well, you can do what I did, or you can do what Chris did. Both are good. So that's your Bundesliga roundup. As we mentioned, Bayern top by 4 points now over Dortmund. The two teams meet next weekend.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Okay, Chris, French football now. Everyone is talking on Twitter anyway last night about Hatem Ben Arfa. He's lost his Newcastle weight. He is ripping it up at the moment for Nice. Joint top scorer in Liga. And Chris, he scored two incredible goals. The second in particular against high-flying Saint-Étienne in a victory.
Yeah, amazing victory. 4-1 away at Saint-Étienne. What a week for Nice. Remember, they scored six against Bordeaux. So phenomenal. 10 goals for them. And yeah, Ben Arfa looks like the player. I mean, natural ability-wise, we've all known, we've all seen it, even in his spell in England at times. Yeah. He scored some amazing goals, and they were brilliant. You should... You know, look them up on YouTube or wherever to see them. I just wonder if he might be a contender for that France squad. I don't know. If he had an incredible season...
Oh, wow. You reckon?
It's very early days, but if you want a game-changing player and you want to gamble in your squad, maybe Ben Arfa. It's a big shout, I know, wow, and it's very early. We're only in September. But if he carried on playing like this for Nice, it'll be interesting to see if he would make it. Terrific win for them, because Saint-Étienne had, you know, a second in the table still. And for Nice to go there and score that many goals and win was the standout result in France, and maybe one of the standout results in Europe, to be honest.
Chris, how are Monaco getting on? Because they're playing Tottenham in the Europa League this week.
I did their first game against Anderlecht, and it's a, you know, we all saw them against Arsenal last season, didn't we? They reached the quarterfinals. It's a total rebuilding squad for Leonardo Jardine, to be honest. These are the big players they lost in the summer, okay? Ferreiro Carrasco, Kondogbia, Kozawa, Abdenor, Martial, and of course Falcao, I guess, although he wasn't there. They really are exciting team. They drew 3-3 at the weekend. They took the lead three times, couldn't hold on for all 3 points, unfortunately, from Monaco's point of view, against Gangon. In many ways, they're a little bit like Tottenham and Anderlecht, actually. They have really, really exciting young players, but whether they can gel quickly is a different question. Hasn't happened in Ligue 1. I think it'll be a really entertaining match against Spurs. And Bernardo Silva is their new star, if you like. He's a terrific talent. I interviewed him and saw him at the under-21s in the Czech Republic, and he was the best player in that tournament in the summer. So he's certainly one to watch out from Tottenham's point of view. But yeah, as I said, they're really exciting. They're really young and really raw, though. And I think it's going to be a difficult season for Monaco, if I'm being honest.
So maybe some goals in that one.
I would expect so, yeah. I mean, they still have some old and experienced heads. Carvalho is still going strong. It seems like an age ago that he made his debut. And Raggi is there, their captain as well, the Italian. Fabinho, he's young as well, though. So they've got a lot of talent, but when you lose that many good players, I don't think anybody can be expected to bounce back immediately. But they are really entertaining. That game I did, Anderlecht Monaco, was a brilliant watch. It was 1-1, but it was the sort of fearless football that you'd expect from two young sides, and it was a thrilling watch.
Chris, Bordeaux beat Lyon 3-1, a great result for Willy Sanyol's side. They were 3-0 up at half time. Remember that Bordeaux are the team in Liverpool's group. And speaking of Liverpool, former striker David Ngog scored a winner for Rams against Lille. That's a really good result, and it finished 1-0. Chris, let's have a quick look at PSG. Angel Di Maria, he scored again.
He did, and we mentioned Bayern being ominously 4 points clear. Well, Paris Saint-Germain are now as well. And you just wonder if that might be them pulling clear. They were 1-0 down at half-time against Nantes, but the big three scored. Ibra, Cavani, Di Maria. They actually started without Cavani and Motta and Matuidi. They were still able to win 4-1 away from home.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how they develop in the Champions League. I think they'll walk the league. I mean, I think they're just going to walk it. And Marseille's south and north stands have been closed. It's after the trouble with Mathieu Valbuena that we mentioned on the last programme, where the game against Lyon was suspended because the fans were throwing objects at him. So, Chris, their first home game since that closure, and they're going to look at the situation further in mid-October, I understand. How did they play?
Not particularly well. Beaten by Angers, newly promoted Angers. Now, three games without a win for OM. It was a pretty big shock for Marseille to lose that game. Maybe we have to give credit to the visitors. And actually, you mentioned Ingolstadt and Darmstadt in the Bundesliga doing well, having been promoted, or certainly recently. Well, Angers are the same. They currently sit fifth in the French top flight, and it's really tight behind Paris Saint-Germain. Interesting to see if they can carry on that form, but a brilliant, famous win for them away at the Velodrome.
This is Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Ajax beat Groningen by 2-0 to stay top of the Eredivisie. Feyenoord move up to second after they beat PEC Zwolle by 2-0 on Sunday. And PSV got a 2-1 win against NAC thanks to Lacadia with the winning goal in that game. So Ajax, Feyenoord, Eredivisie and PSV, the top four at the moment. But Ajax looking to peel away, having missed out on the title last season. In Belgium, Chris, did you see this? Unbelievable. I don't know if you've seen this miss yet.
No. You've been
Belgium.
Talking about it. Who is it? Where?
Well, it was in a game between Zulte Waregem and Vestalo. So Vestalo were 1-0 up. They went on to lose the game 4-2. But they had a chance to make it 2-0. Vishnakovs from about not even a yard, Chris.
I can hear the shock in your voice. It's good.
Oh, it's insane. He's sort of like slightly... He is slightly off balance and it's a difficult angle, but you just have to put a bit of limb on it to get it over the line. Just a face, anything. And he puts it across the face of goal. Maybe we'll tweet that out later. But I had John, who produces the highlight show of the Jupiler Pro League, emailed me and was like, have you seen this? So we absolutely had to mention it on the podcast. In Belgium at the moment, who stands still top despite drawing 2-2 at Muskron Perewelts, Anderlecht 2 points behind them. Chris, Russia.
Yeah, big weekend. Top four all played each other and they all drew. So CSKA drew with Loko. They took the lead but were pegged back. I tell you, Seydou Doumbia can't stop scoring since returning to Moscow. I had him as one of my signings of the summer transfer window, and he's really given CSKA something else going forward, which they didn't have since he left, to be honest. And the other big game, Spartak against Zenit, 2-2. For the second time in a couple of weeks, Zenit scoring late in Moscow to draw 2-2 and to just about keep in touch in the title race. A decent point for them actually away at Spartak. Artyom Dzyuba got the late goal there, but certainly it's CSKA at the moment. They're still unbeaten. They have 26 points, 5 ahead of Lokomotiv. So it was a decent point for Loko away at CSKA. And then it's Zenit on 18 points and Spartak on 17. That is the top four in Russia.
Let's talk about some of the teams that are playing English, British teams in the Champions League and Europa League this week. Olympiacos, well, they won 5-1 at the weekend. against Pas Giannina. I don't know if I'm quite pronouncing that right. But Brownie Day, who was at West Brom last season and quite frankly was pony, he plays up front for them. Peyton Kasami, you may remember him. He scored that unbelievable volley goal for Fulham. He was in the Premier League. And Esteban Cambiaso was on the bench for them as well. So Olympiacos, top of the table and looking relatively strong as they go to face an Arsenal side. Yeah, as they go to... Yeah, I mean, it's boring, isn't it?
But, yeah, I mean, I can't remember the stat, but we almost weren't born the last time Olympiacos won the Greek Super League. it's whether, but they were very good in the Champions League. Remember, I was going back through it. They were very close to knocking Juventus out in the group stage and finishing behind Atletico.
Yeah.
So they're no mugs on the European stage. Arsenal will have to be good in that game.
And they almost knocked out Man United
yeah.
a couple of years ago under David Moyes.
Yeah.
Okay, Chelsea. So you mentioned you interviewed Jose Mourinho. His Chelsea go back to his former club, Porto. How did they get on?
Well, they were held by Morientzin. But yeah, Yassine Brahimi came off injured and he might miss the Chelsea game. Will be a massive blow. It's interesting at the top. Porto and Sporting have the same amount of points. Sporting drew. The big winners were Benfica this weekend. They won. And with the other two dropping points now, they're only 2 points behind Porto, having lost in O Clasico a couple of weeks ago. So good weekend for them. Porto. But Porto, whatever happens domestically, when it comes to Europe, they tend to up their game anyway. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to that result domestically in terms of what a tough test it will be for Chelsea.
And Chris, Fenerbahce against Celtic. We all know Robin van Persie's there at the moment. There was a big Istanbul derby the weekend.
Yeah, not as famous or as rich as Fenerbahce Galatasaray, but it's pretty lively when Besiktas play either of those sides. And Besiktas won to overtake Fener and go top. And Super Mario Gomez is playing there. He got two goals, a Kier own goal as well. Van Persie scored for Fener. But a defeat for them. And actually, on Twitter, there's quite a few videos of the Besiktas fans celebrating that at the stadium. Of course, that was a stadium where Liverpool beat Milan in that incredible final. So Liverpool fans will know how far out of the centre it is. And also celebrating in Istanbul centre after the victory. So big win for Besiktas. And they're top of the league at the moment, ahead of Fenerbahce now.
Chris, you've just jogged my memory from when we were in Istanbul together trying to sneak into stadiums.
Yeah.
Do you remember? That was weird we did that.
Well, we did well. We reached all three stadiums.
No, they wouldn't let us in at Besiktas, do you remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That stadium.
They wouldn't let us in.
That stadium's been rebuilt now. And then you foolishly bought some expensive water off a small boy, if you remember, and were then worried you were going to get, like, sick because it was clearly some racket which you'd fallen for.
There was no seal on the bottle.
That was it.
I was so panicking. Istanbul, a great football city as well. Another one we'd strongly recommend. Sion, who Liverpool play host in the Europa League this week, they lost for the second game running, and they're well behind Basel. They're something like 13 points behind them in the table after 10 games. I'll be honest, I haven't seen them. I couldn't give an honest appraisal of how good they are or not. But judging by the league table, you know, that should be relatively routine for Liverpool. But I said that about Ludogorets last season, and Liverpool almost drew it home to them last season. Chris, what you got on this week?
Busy European week. You and I are together tomorrow night, listening, everybody, to the UEFA Champions League match that I show. Then, as I mentioned, I'm at United on Tuesday. And then I'm commentating even, on Lazio against Saint-Étienne on Thursday, which I'm really looking forward to.
I'm on holiday, Chris, from Thursday, so you're on your own on Monday. Have you got anything planned for that show? Have you got anything remotely planned for what you're going to do?
Me and a microphone. It's going to be the best show ever.
Yeah, but
actually,
it can't just be you. You have to book a guest.
No,
or
don't
something.
Worry. I've got some ideas up my sleeve. And to be honest, you'll be back in 2 weeks.
Do you honestly? Are you lying? Are we going to stop recording? You're going to go, mate, I'm up against it.
No. Never fear. I've got a full 7 days. And what's going to be
worried.
Great is you're going to be sitting by your pool in Turkey or whatever.
And
you'll listen and you'll think, oh, maybe they won't want me on back. Despite the fact you sort of organised the whole thing. I think you'll find it's called a coup. Shouldn't go on holiday.
Oh, God, a revolution. I didn't even see it coming.
You've been listening to Football in Europe. Join us every week on Audio Boom for the latest content, interviews and special features. For more, follow @FAE Show on Twitter or head to footballineurope.co.uk.